King gave Grant a quiet elbow as the Cerberus explorers disembarked from the Black Hawk helicopter with their royal escort. The sharp-eyed point man didn't need his keen predatory senses to notice that one part of the hangar had been quarantined from the rest of the mountainside flight deck. The secluded area was obvious enough, with its tall sheets of tarpaulin hanging from the ceiling and Cobra men armed with black assault rifles standing vigilant guard over the section. It was a secret, but it was obvious that it was a newly acquired one, because Durga had not had the time or facility set aside to properly stow it away where it wouldn't be noticed. What caught Kane's eye were radiation warning signs posted on another secured section of the hangar. Kane was familiar with nuclear power plants, especially considering that atomic generators powered Cerberus Redoubt. They'd also encountered other industrialized societies with nuclear power capability in their travels. Unfortunately, the hangar appeared too open and far too close to the Naga population to be a properly secured nuclear reactor. The lead-lined chambers off to the side of the hangar suggested weapons storage bunkers. Radiation and armories could only mean nuclear warheads. Durga and Hannah hadn't made any fuss about the presence of the weapons stores, an unstated threat to the visiting humans. The Cobra warriors had much more than the venom in their fangs, should the explorers from Cerberus show that they were actually enemies. It was a quiet way to convey the knowledge. Durga had watched Kane look directly at the radiation warning label, but said nothing. Whether the Naga had the reach to strike at the Bitterroot Mountains was not the question on Kane's mind for the moment. The fact that the Cobra men had the power to turn large swaths of the remaining habitable world into lifeless wastelands in a slash of cleansing fire was all that needed to be said. The Naga had the ability to make any serious conflict with humanity a costly venture, regardless of the final victor. Durga smiled, then extended a hand to let it rest on Kane's shoulder.
Ah, that is no concern to you. I wouldn't want to harm the world we are both sworn to protect.
I didn't see any aircraft for their delivery.
Astute. We'd have to deliver them the old-fashioned way.
Deliver what?
Our defensive munitions.
No big deal.
Kane didn't actually feel so nonchalant about the presence of atomic warheads, even behind heavily armored doors. He trusted Lakesh to be observant enough to see his discomfort and form a conclusion or two. A slight frown rested on Lakesh's face for a moment, then the scientist pushed it away, continuing to receive the tour from Hannah. Durga joined Lakesh with that part of the group. Manticore, Hannah's personal bodyguard, lingered back with Kane and Grant. Kane nodded toward the nuclear magazine chamber.
Are the humans in this area that much of a threat to warrant those?
Actually, that was a decision by the whole of the royal family. We had located several stockpiles of the weapons, but they were kept under wraps for decades.
What prompted the claws coming out?
Tiamat's presence in the skies above our home.
I thought he said you didn't have a means of delivery.
Nothing reusable, at least for the Great Sky Dragon.
Kane nodded, not pressing the issue any further. The ex-magistrate could tell, however, that Manticore was one of the Naga warriors who would have flown any suicide mission to destroy Tiamat. The hooded champion nodded to Kane, a silent message of thanks. Bridget Baptiste allowed herself to give in to the magnificent expanse of the Naga's underground home city. The subterranean metropolis sprawled out, according to the proud Princess Hannah, for 50 square miles. The lair was thousands of years old, but the Naga had preserved it and added to it. Most fascinating to the archivist were ancient murals that depicted elements of the city's millennial history along miles of the several hundreds of corridors. Ancient pictograms adorned the trim along the columns that served as support struts between floors and buttressed walls. This was a much clearer vision of the pictogram script that had been worn down by weather and traffic in the temple. With a much more concise and preserved form, and spotting similar imagery to Egyptian hieroglyphs and Sumerian alphabet symbols, Bridget was able to guess the meaning of inscriptions scrawled beneath the murals. It didn't provide more than a hint of the Naga's lengthy history, but it was enough of a taste to intrigue her.
Hannah, are all the columns in the hallways adorned with these writings?
The Naga take pride in the past. We've been able to keep our history alive and vibrant. Most of what is up there has been added to remind the new bloods who have joined our family. Stories are repeated on various columns throughout the city.
And the murals are repeated as well?
Only thematically. Artists of different eras depicted events differently.
Such as the two great dyings?
Yes.
So your people were among those that the great flood targeted?
Enlil was jealous of our devotion to Enki. We would not give in to his rule. And we were not the only ones.
But it was an effort at driving us into extinction. It failed.
Hence, you've remained in hiding since? The subterranean nature of the city kept you safe?
Not entirely.
The lowest level columns list the names of those who drowned when the deluge was directed at us.
And the second great dying?
We had assumed that it was the humans. It was your weapons that wrought much of the destruction. The harsh nuclear winter made life difficult. Then came the mutant hordes. Then finally, the magistrates took our king. Since then, we've recovered from fate's efforts to render us extinct.
The new bloods?
Not all who are Naga were born that way. The royal family can trace its lineage back thousands of years, but others are more recent additions to our race. My bodyguard, Mantico, is a son of such converts. He was born true.
Others are not fully converted, at least according to Fargo.
The remnants of their mammalian heritage. Many who serve in my personal guard are like that. It's not a matter of the time of their conversion. It's just a genetic throwback. Something that the Cobra Baths cannot change.
Could we see those? Those utilize nanotechnology to alter beings on the DNA scale, correct?
I'm not sure that would be wise. Without the Cobra Baths, our people would not have recovered.
I don't see the problem. What damage could they do?
Bridget picked up the note of skepticism in Hannah's voice, but remained quiet. When they got a private moment, Bridget would point out the incongruities. The explorers and their royal escort exited one corridor into a vast central hallway. Columns rose 100 feet to buttress a vaulted ceiling. In the center of the great chamber stood a 25-foot-tall statue of a crowned cobra warrior. The sculpture wielded a spear that was engulfed in flames. Bridget could tell that the great carving had only been recently added within the past few decades. She was fascinated by the mechanism for keeping the spear alight, spotting hints of the internal vented pipe that burned natural gas.
Garuda, my father. This was built to commemorate his victory at the Battle of Sky Spear.
Bridget looked at the carving's face. There was a resemblance between father and son, if the sculpture was accurate.
Purely symbolic, I presume. The Sky Spear. It's a reference to the anti-aircraft missiles used against the magistrates?
We utilized a mix of old Soviet Strela and American Stinger missiles against the modified Apache gunship sent by the Berenice.
You found your own aircraft after that, right?
Once we saw the destructive power of aircraft, we knew that we needed that kind of an advantage.
When was this excursion?
It was 30 years ago, before I was born.
When Durga rested a hand on Hannah's shoulder, Bridget caught her subtle flinch from his touch. It was the smallest of shrugs, but the reflex told Bridget volumes in a language that required no translation.
My father gave his all for our freedom. In the decades since, I have struggled to match his selflessness for the sake of the Naga. For a long time, I had a grudge against the humans because of my father's death. Hannah can confirm this long, festering anger. However, thanks to her wise, gentle counsel and the advice of my mother, my fury at the mammals who caused our people's greatest loss has cooled.
He treated all human intrusion as if they had been sent to continue the genocidal war instigated by the Barons. Fargo can testify to that.
Not that the Consortium didn't have designs on the wealth of technology held by the Naga.
The Millennialist Expedition hid its intentions poorly.
Bridget took a small measure of glee in Fargo's sudden discomfort. The accusations had flown from the lips of the Cerberus warriors, and Fargo had an answer for every one of them, each deflected with skillful ease. However, pinned by the raw, bloodshot gaze of the hooded Cobra Man, the condemnations had a ferocious weight that pressed on Fargo harder than anything before. The man was incapable of shrugging off the Naga's glare. Durga's face relaxed, and he took Fargo's hand in his.
That's for the past. We have to look to the future, build upon what's gone before. We both have been handed lessons in the form of our mistakes. Let's take these lessons and turn our destiny into a gift rather than a curse.
Bridget watched the prince and the tomb robber. If the two were colluding, Fargo certainly didn't show it. The man was paralyzed with fear. What she could see, however, was the grim glint in Kane's eye. Something had triggered his acute senses, but given the nature of this first contact with the Naga, it would be hours before the Cerberus expedition had a moment of privacy to confer. There would be a grand dinner after they met with the Queen. There was no doubt that introductions with the Queen would be long and formal. Though Kane dreaded these kinds of affairs, the dour expression that had seized the tall warrior was not inspired by the potential for death by boredom. Durga paused as the group reached the tall pair of vaulted doors wrought in finely carved and polished wood. On either side of the archway stood grim sentinels, armed with black, equally grim rifles. Their eyes gleamed as they eyed the visitors. Bridget noted that these guardians were fresh and alert, and conducted themselves with an intensity that rivaled Kane and Grant when they entered a dangerous new territory.
"These are my mother's public chambers, where she receives citizens and the few visitors who enter our city. Many who step through these doors are Naga, and without exception, others who have passed through intend to join us by their transformation into Cobra Baths."
"You will be the first humans to address Matron Yun with that intention of transformation. This is the rarest of honors, but hopefully you will not be the last of the human race to come as friends."
"The last time humans..."
Caught off guard, Durga grabbed Hannah, tugging her aside. The quartet of guardians at the entrance whirled, their rifles up and tracking as they formed a living wall around Durga and Hannah. Kane and Grant deployed their sin-eaters.
"Mother!"
"Domi, Baptiste, stay out here. Prince, permission to accompany you inside."
Durga glanced toward Kane and Grant, relief suddenly filling his features. The Cobra Prince drew his handgun.
"Yes, yes, of course. Get those damn doors open!"
"Nephilim? How the hell did they get in here?"
"The only Nephilim I knew of were the corpses in the hangar. But I examined all of the bodies."
"We haven't seen everything yet. Don't jump to conclusions."
"So what should we jump to?"
Kane and Grant shared a quick look. Then the two magistrates hurled themselves at a panel of the broken door. Grant and Kane slipped through the opening.
"Cover us!"
Manticore left Hannah's side and crouched, utilizing the broken door as a barricade, tilting his handgun to one side to make certain that he wouldn't jam the weapon on the wood. Bridget grimaced, hating to be left behind, but Kane and Grant were trained professionals. The former archivist held her ground, knowing that Grant and Kane needed all the room they could get in the royal chambers. If they needed her support, they'd call for it. Until then, they needed her to analyze the situation. When Kane went through the door, with Grant on his heels, he knew that he was plunging into an apocalyptic battle. Cobra-hooded warriors, obviously members of the Queen's personal cadre, lay charred by the intense heat of assbolts. A figure stood at the throne, while two others hauled a limp form away. Kane had never seen the Queen before, but considering the slight frame of the captive, he made an educated guess. He dropped to one knee, making himself a smaller target and steadying his aim at one of the kidnappers. The attackers obviously had more than Nephilim weaponry. The smart armor of the Anunnaki henchmen meant that only a dead center hit would penetrate. Kane rolled, then got to his knees again for a second try. The Sin Eater had cored the attacker, though even through the fog of battle, Kane noted the Cobra hood rising from its shoulders.
"Smart metal, Grant!"
"Got it."
Rather than engage in a series of acrobatics to get a better shot, the towering Cerberus warrior adjusted his aim. With the second kidnapper down, Matron Yun slumped to the floor. The third marauder, standing at the throne, swung his asp from a smoldering royal bodyguard toward the two interfering humans. Kane and Grant rushed to reach cover. But the column that Grant had put between himself and the mysterious attacker snapped under the energy blast. Grant launched himself from the base of the collapsing stone structure. Though the big warrior's shadow suit protected him from small arms fire and lacerations, the ceiling coming down on his head would be a bad situation. Grant found himself missing the claustrophobic magistrate helmet he used to wear, as bits of debris grazed his ear with enough force to break skin, but luckily his headlong charge had protected him from the full brunt of the collapsing roof. Grant hit the floor in a slide, skidding several feet. With a deft roll, Grant scurried to his knees, scanning for the enemy who had nearly brought the house down. Kane grimaced as he saw that a royal guardian was still moving, despite a smoking stump where his left arm used to be. Unfortunately, the Naga Sentinel was right beneath the rain of flagstones falling from the ceiling. Kane exploded into action. He scooped up the wounded Cobra Man. A shard of broken marble rocketed toward Kane's head. Kane's normally preternaturally sharp senses were deluged with indecipherable information. The only thing he could do was cradle the injured Naga to his side and ride out the momentary disorientation. Kane looked around, dazzling stars of light fading from where they'd blurred his vision. Grant was trotting up to the throne, Sin Eater aimed toward a stone panel.
Kane!
I'm here!
Kane struggled to his feet.
You didn't answer me!
I took a knock to the head, saving this guy.
Kane looked at the Naga, who cradled what remained of his left arm.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
The Queen's still here!
Grant scooped up her slender form into his powerful arms and moved back toward the large double doors. Durga entered with a dozen Cobra soldiers, moving directly toward Grant and Matron Yun.
Blood! That's from my head. I took a hit to my head, but it just cut me. She doesn't appear to have any burns or lacerations.
Thank you, Grant. Why did you move her?
There was a passage behind the throne that at least two of the attackers ducked into. I tried to shoot through, but the marble was just too thick.
Durga took a few steps, but Manticore took the prince's forearm.
The passage could be booby-trapped. I know the urge is to just rush through in pursuit, but there are injured here that need assistance, and the structure is...
Bridget stood in the doorway, stuffing her pistol back into its holster, as Kane helped his injured ally walk.
Need help?
I need a painkiller, but I can grin and bear a little headache for now.
You certain?
If you're worrying about a concussion, I've had them before. I'm not feeling any of the symptoms. There are others that need help more than I do.
A Naga medic escorted the one-armed guard to a stretcher. Bridget dragged Kane aside and pulled the flashlight from a belt pouch.
Just hold still and let me check.
Fine. Thanks.
Lakesh and Domi joined Hannah as other Naga medics tended to the dazed but still defiant Matron Yun.
You treat me as if I were dying. Stop clucking after me like hens.
Matron Yun, if you don't mind, you should relax.
Yun squinted, looking at the scientist. She also noticed that she was in the shadow of something huge. With a glance, she saw Grant towering over her, a vigilant colossus not yet willing to leave her side.
It's hard to relax when I have a dozen hands poking and prodding me.
You heard the lady. Make a hole and make it wide!
Every Naga within earshot took a step back.
Thank you.
Grant smiled and accepted her offered hand.
Size has its privileges. I'm Grant.
I had heard of your legendary strength. I had not realized it extended to such a stentorian voice.
She means you're really loud, Grant.
I've got such a kick-ass job. See the world, meet panterrestrial royalty, learn new words.
All in a day's work. But you are bleeding.
It's a scratch. I just wanted to make sure you were okay first.
Don't mind Kane and Grant. They're stubborn, but essentially good-hearted.
Bridget, correct? Yeah. Ugh.
Yun got to her feet, offering Grant a chance to sit down.
Yes.
Grant, the representation of strength. Bridget, the representation of intellect. And Kane, the representation of courage and compassion. The three heads.
Kane popped a couple of painkillers into his mouth.
Sorry for littering your throne room with dead kidnappers, Your Highness.
A forgivable inconvenience, Kane. Are you and your compatriot all right?
We've both got hard heads. No worries, Your Highness.
Except for the obvious concerns, who attacked you?
It was hard to tell. The royal chambers filled with thick black smoke, and the next thing I knew, I had been cuffed by a kidnapper.
I saw cobra hoods on the two that were manhandling you.
I didn't leave much of a head on mine. But where did your people get a hold of Nephilim weapons and armor?
We have an Anunnaki ship, captured only recently by the prince. However, the Naga military have been guarding it in the hangar.
Durga shifted his stance uncomfortably.
What is it, son?
Not to cast accusations out of turn, but I had heard...
Please, just say what you mean.
I had heard rumors that some Naga, recent converts, do not feel that the current structure of our society is right for them.
Yes, the untrustworthy new bloods once more.
I am serious.
Yun looked at Kane, Grant, and Bridget.
If such is the case, then we have an opportunity to deal with those who would change our ways with lawless violence. We have among us now three who could change the course of such tumultuous times.
Matron Yun, we're not particularly well known for leaving societies the same way we found them.
No, but you do have a reputation for fighting wrongs and setting evil to rout. I can think of no one better to aid us in this time of darkness.
Cain caught a glimpse of Durga out of the corner of his eye. The flicker of a smile on the Cobra Prince's face coincided with a whisper caressing the back of Cain's mind. Durga's grin suggested to Cain that he'd found one of the ringleaders. Cain just wished that he could smother the dread that Durga was using the Cerberus envoys as the catalyst for whatever diabolical plan he had in store. Once more, the real world faded out, and Durga found himself standing in the wreckage of the throne room with Hannah and Yun, who were impaled vertically on pikes. Enlil sat between them, reclining in the queen's small throne.
Do you mind?
Mind what?
That's a very distracting image.
Durga looked away from the sight of the two most important women in his life.
For all your disdain, you still care for them.
What can I say? I'm not a completely heartless bastard.
Enlil banished the images of the two Nagani from the telepathic conference.
You have to be kidding me. You murder your father, force your bride to be into sodomy to reinforce your ego, and you're plotting to overthrow your mother. And you still have a concern about their discomfort.
It is one thing to plot murder and betrayal. It is another to hang those people on a shank of steel and listen to them suffer and scream.
So, killing's easy if you handle it quickly and cleanly.
Just tell me what this is all about.
Patience, my prince.
Durga was at the throne in a moment, hands wrapping around Enlil's throat.
You're starting to piss me off here, Enlil. Give me a good reason why I shouldn't squeeze your head off.
Do you enjoy your heart beating?
What should I be patient about? The weapons you provided my operatives weren't enough to complete the first stage of my plan.
Your timing was far from ideal. With the presence of Cain and Grant, you could only hope to sow the seeds of an upcoming conflict. Those two humans are notoriously capable of derailing any violence. I warned you about their effectiveness.
So what do I do in the meantime?
You already have a plan B. I can peer into your mind easily, remember? You are an open book to me.
If so, then why the surprise at my distaste at your shenanigans? What have you got to say, Enlil? I'm standing in the wreckage of our primary scheme here, literally.
I'm simply informing you that you will have to find another means to take the power from your mother. If you act too quickly or harshly, you will draw the attention of the Cerberus interlopers.
This is where your statements of my being an open book to you ring falsely. For all your blather of ultimate knowledge, you don't have a clue about what I'm really working at. But for now, I have my pieces in place.
You're doubting my godhood, Naga?
I'm doubting your omniscience. Your power is unmistakable, as is your immortality. But being all-knowing and all-seeing aren't quite working out for you.
Would you care to elaborate, or should I make the effort to pry the secret from your mind?
Let's just say I now have unimpeachable witnesses to the evidence of the conspiracy against which I will have to take drastic measures. Right now, my mother considers Cain, Grant, and the Baptiste woman as unassailable angels of purity and light.
And it was Cain and Grant themselves who reaped the evidence that you would require to begin a plan of martial law.
I hand you a few crumbs, and you believe you are dining on the whole loaf. For now, you know enough. I'd rather not have you learn any more, in case the Cerberus people try to pay you a visit.
How would they know about me?
Durga smiled.
You implicated me in assisting the disgruntled elements you have stirred up by using my smart metal armor nodes and the Asp blasters.
As well as messages to and from you, and graffiti that proclaims that you, not Enki, have been the true forge of the Naga's greatness.
Your hands are washed clean.
From your concerns for your mother's health and safety, you have proved that for all your flaws, your heart is ultimately in the right place.
Cain and the others side with me, and together we go after the menaces that would bring down both humankind and the Cobra-Blooded. But when the smoke clears, Cain and his ilk will join Garuda among the lamented dead.
And I am driven away?
Would it inconvenience a god so much to be worshipped by the wrong name? In our time of darkest despair, who better to ride to the rescue than the true lord and creator of the Naga?
In person? The Naga would know that no Anunnaki craft would be in Earth orbit.
Durga pointed to a large screen summoned into the telepathic conference between the two conspirators. On it, Enlil appeared, a news ticker crawling across the screen, announcing the contact between Enki and the Earth across the vast gulf of space.
Hyperspace transmissions are not possible, even for the Anunnaki.
You know that. Would the rest of Earth's population be aware?
There is a reason why the humans refer to the sneakiest of their ilk as snakes. A twisted little ploy. But what would make you feel that the Cerberus warriors would help you in your plan?
There is a dead starship in Earth orbit. Damaged, ruined, but still stocked with the treasures of extraterrestrial technology. Technology that you would like to recover in order to restore your dominion. The Naga Rebellion will be eager, even anxious to get hold of it for you. And Manticore, the rival for my bride's affections, has already planted the seed of our ability to reach Tiamat's corpse.
Another unassailable witness, this time for the humans. Clever.
So, Cain and his people will seek the fastest way to the bowels of Tiamat, armed and ready to expect trouble. They will go on a desperate mission to plant nuclear munitions in the heart of the great ship, in order to deny the rebels their prizes.
And in the process, they will sacrifice their existence in a flash of atomic fire.
Perhaps my book is open to you, Enlil.
Not quite. But once you started explaining your ploy, I was able to read ahead. Naturally, in the race to reach Tiamat, the bogeyman Enlil will be defeated.
The Naga are not quite aware of the rule. If you don't see the body, they aren't dead.
Keep up the excellent work, Durga.
Durga had to repress his grin. If the grand old god knew what really was in store, Enlil would be seeking the sanctity of mountains to hide his head. The Anunnaki had no love in the prince's heart. For too long, the Naga had been outcasts, hunted to near extinction. Soon, millennia of wrongs would be righted against both man and Anunnaki. The quarters for the six humans were roomy enough for them to find their space comfortable, even though the denizens of Cerberus made sure to exclude Fargo from their current conversation. As Fargo sulked in his corner of the suite, Cain began informing the others of the nuclear capabilities he suspected the Naga of having.
Nothing that can't be loaded onto an improvised orbital rocket, perhaps similar to that the Chinese used to have along the coast. As far as I can remember the history of conflicts in this area, India and Pakistan both had short-range nuclear missiles, enough to toss a warhead about 500 miles across a border.
The Kashmir has been claimed as sovereign territory by both nations.
They didn't have much by way of a program. There were not any autonomous human spaceflight programs, though they did have success with launching satellites.
We're working under the assumption that the only ones involved in giving the Naga space travel were India's humans. According to the history lesson we were given, Enki gave the Naga the task of watching over humanity, guarding against future abuses by Enlil and his faction, with Tiamat...
Sound reasoning, except that Durga seemed very concerned about maintaining a guard on the captured skimmer.
Could be a trick.
Why? He seemed genuinely upset by his mother's attempted kidnapping and the betrayal of his own citizens to an overlord.
I just don't trust him. He made his own people jumpy.
I noticed that Hana flinched every time Durga touched her. Manticore also expressed some disbelief in Durga's benevolence.
Manticore also indicated that the Naga had some sort of manned craft set up for a suicide run against Tiamat.
Well, in 1993, the Indian government had developed a polar satellite launch vehicle. Its orbital payload was around 3,200 kilograms, but its maximum height was 660 kilometers. To reach Tiamat and return...
It was a one-way trip.
So if the overlords had been inspired to act against the Earth...
Tiamat would have eaten the PSLV like a peanut. Kanan Grant can attest to the firepower on her hull dedicated to point defense.
A nuclear explosion would still have jarred her.
Like shooting a sand cat with an arrow. You'd need an insanely lucky shot to guarantee anything.
As it stands now, though, it looks as if the warheads are designed for defensive use, reconfigured to be deployed by helicopter.
Even a death bird couldn't fire a missile powerful enough to remain outside the atomic detonation blast radius.
Who said anything about shooting? Land in front of the advancing army, cover the nuke with a small layer of dirt, then fly away. Detonate when the approaching force is within a mile or two. Flying fast, the helicopter would be out of the blast radius in a few minutes, right?
Right, Domi. That was one of the plans between the Soviets and the Americans in Europe. The plan was to leave behind atomic demolition charges. The Red Army would roll on through the areas where their tank forces could maneuver easily, and small yield nukes would be set off after being planted like that.
Grant comes up with some fun history lessons.
Fargo looked up from his journal.
You've got a strange sense of fun.
I liked him better when he was sulking in the corner.
Psychic conversation.
I'm sure the Millennial Consortium has data on Psi-Muti powers.
There's some evidence, but the High Command is skeptical of it. Really, there hasn't been much contact, and the scientists in charge are too busy looking for reliable technology to enforce their rule to go hunting for rumors and myths.
But they sent a small army to investigate a corner of the subcontinent?
The Snake People were only a legend. However, ancient records of Indian facilities surfaced, and after running into two or three emptied redoubts, we knew that someone had to have taken the goodies within.
The rumors of underground snake men had some factual basis, Fargo.
With an underground war base chief in their minds. I was surprised that they were utilizing helicopters.
They don't wear a lot of clothes, but so what? I'm barefoot half the time. I still get my molecules shot halfway around the planet in the Mat-Trans.
They maintained a low profile, even while flying to greet us and return us to this facility. They don't want to be seen. A stealthy existence is paramount to their survival, especially given their interactions with both humankind and the overlords.
Durga appeared quick to downplay his hostility toward humans. He could have simply stated that his attack on Fargo's ship was defense against hostile raiders.
Self-defense? More like a man throwing bricks at an ant mound.
This all could just be a ploy to make Durga look good while he's eliminating any competition for rulership of the Naga. The Queen took a good hit to the head, and being taken hostage would have given Durga every validation to turn this whole underground city upside down.
We got in the way of that, though we did find another corpse left behind in the throne room, also sporting Anunnaki gear.
Leaving a false trail, that could backfire.
Not if the pace of events prevents a rational examination of the evidence. Tyrants have utilized manufactured threats in order to justify their power base before.
Fargo pursed his lips as he listened to the Cerberus group.
Well, Fargo, got an opinion on this?
If you have suspicions of a conspiracy, then what are you doing sitting around thumbing your asses over it?
And here you thought he didn't have any useful input.
It's best to be patient and give Bry and the rest of our support staff a chance to give us everything we need through electronic scanning. If we discover anything that might help prevent a takeover of any kind, we'll turn it over to the proper authorities here.
You guys heard that the Naga have been monitoring your frequencies. That's how they learn so much about you. What's to keep them from hacking your contact signal?
Encryption. And now that we know where to look, and that we're monitoring the low-profile AM band transmissions that the Naga are using to keep from being heard, thanks to the monitor we left back in the temple, we'll be kept up to date.
Right. Well, I don't want to be thrown in irons when they discover you're spying on them.
It's a passive system, so if anyone does discover it...
All right. Annoying bullies.
The Cerberus explorers and their companion paused. They hadn't been expecting anyone this soon, and were surprised by the intrusion. Kane rose to answer the door. It was Hannah and her bodyguard, Manticore.
We're sorry to interrupt. We just want to make certain that your recovery is coming along well.
We're fine. What about the guardsmen I rescued?
Can we come in?
Kane stepped aside, allowing the Naga representatives into the suite. Manticore dipped his head to get through the doorway, the same as Grant had done when they first settled in.
Guardsman Coral will recover, though the loss of his arm will prevent him from returning to active duty as a protector.
Why can't the cobra baths be utilized to regenerate his limb?
They are just for turning man to Naga. How could it regrow severed limbs?
We have a theory that the cobra baths are a nano-machine suspension. A similar process was used to rejuvenate Lakesh. He's over 250 years old.
But I thought Lakesh had been preserved by means of suspended animation.
I was, for about a century. Then I had transplants and cybernetic organs implanted in my body to extend my lifespan.
Hence your blue eyes.
Astute, Manticore.
It's my job to be aware of little details. The slightest thing out of place could mean the difference between life and death for Hannah or any of the rest of the royal family.
Too bad you weren't present in the royal chambers. Were you too aware of the secret passage behind the Queen's throne?
It was a secured escape route. From her throne, Matron Nguyen would need to cross only 10 feet to achieve cover in the event of an attack.
What about on the other side of that escape hatch?
We had lost contact with the sentries watching the egress end of the corridor. Both warriors were found with their throats torn.
Torn?
Cobra fangs. Much quieter than using an asp blaster.
That would take a considerable amount of aggression, wouldn't it?
I'm just going to demonstrate something. This is not meant as a real attack.
A real attack? Oh!
In a flash, Manticore had pinned Lakesh to the wall, his lips pressed to Lakesh's throat. The scientist's blue eyes were wide with horror. Domi had her Detonix 45 half-drawn, but Kane's hand was on her wrist.
Good Lord!
Manticore stepped back, lowering the scientist to the floor again.
We can't run much faster than a standard human, but within a few yards, we are deadly quick.
But wouldn't another Naga have the same reflexes?
You weren't able to dodge my slap back at Cerberus.
Domi has a point. The aggressor generally has the advantage in a situation like this. By the time the victim realizes he's under attack, the fangs are already in his neck, especially at short range. And since the conspirators were using their natural weaponry, it was quiet and quick.
I would have thought there would be some immunity to your own species' venom.
The killing factor was not venom, but the fangs tearing the jugular and carotid arteries. Their throats were torn. They weren't killed by venom.
But wait, we were talking about regrowing limbs and the cobra baths. And we're looking at a 250-year-old man who doesn't look much older than 40.
My youth was restored via the use of a process similar to the one that converts humans to Naga.
So the cobra baths could be reprogrammed to another purpose?
Absolutely, provided the proper interface.
Do you have that kind of interface?
No, but Enlil did, back when he went under the identity of Sam.
Sam?
Enlil reincarnated himself in several forms, the most recent of which was the artificially aged son of one of our regular opponents, Erica Van Sloan.
The dragon bitch, you made damn certain I couldn't cut a new deal with the Millennial Consortium.
You will keep a civil tongue in the presence of the Princess of the Blood. I will not warn you a second time.
Fargo, you'll have to tell me your strategy for making such warm, lasting relationships.
Enlil, we had just been speaking of him in regards to the skimmer that Durga had discovered.
The nanomachines, as you call them, are Anunnaki technology?
Not exclusively, but Enlil, both as Colonel Thrush and Sam, had considerable experience with them. It's no stretch of the imagination that Enlil still possesses a facility with that technology.
Manticore and Hannah looked at each other.
What?
Durga spoke of using the skimmer to head to Tiamat to gather information. He said that the Anunnaki still had treasures on the corpse of the ancient ship.
A programming interface, perhaps? Because he also mentioned reconstructing Garuda from his injured remains. If a variation on our cobra bath could rejuvenate you and undo 210 years of aging.
But how would Durga even know what to look for?
Would you?
My field of expertise is high-level mathematics and quantum physics. Bridget would have a better clue, but only because she and the others have been on Colonel Thrush's ship.
Enlil has another craft.
staffed by android and cybernetic duplicates from alternate universes. But that craft doesn't exist in this time stream anymore. Enlil wouldn't have access to it.
So his only hope would be to return to Tiamat.
Not his only hope. There are caches of ancient Anunnaki technology that have been deposited around the globe, including, potentially, within your city.
That's one thing I wanted to ask you. What is the power source of this city?
The catacombs are warmed by thermal vents that reach deep into the Earth's crust. The process creates very little pollution. More recently, we constructed a small fission reactor that generates electricity. If there had been another form of power for the city, its secrets have been lost in antiquity.
Not if there's someone walking around now who was alive when this place was built, like Enki or Enlil.
You seem to be fairly loose with the implication that Durga might be in collusion with your enemy, Enlil. How do you know you can trust us?
As Manticore said, small details can mean the difference between life and death for those we care about. Just how has Durga been acting out of character?
Demonstrations of understanding that he is not known for, especially his forgiveness of Fargo. Durga fumed for weeks after he was scarred.
I'm glad it took months for me to reach Cerberus in that event. Gave him time to forget most of his anger.
He loves his red eye now. It makes him more intimidating.
I have another question, if you don't mind. Your relationship with Durga.
We are only promised to each other. Durga cannot marry me until the matron steps down as queen.
It is a safety measure to prevent Hana from taking action against Matron Yun. There is less temptation for intrigue.
You don't look happy about that.
Considering that you're not married, I'm wondering...
Durga is not a kind prince.
Why put up with it?
Some things are worth giving up if it means protecting something else.
Do you know why Durga could be changing his public views?
Your presence? And I'm not certain Durga received that skimmer in the way he told us.
Hand it over on a silver platter?
We have corpses in storage. The Nephilim suffered gunshot wounds, but the old legends state that they are soulless and mindless minions.
It would not take much for them to stand still and die at their master's command.
You people seem so certain of these speculations. What if you're wrong and Durga really is correct about a faction of Naga willing to throw in with the Anunnaki?
We're not acting on our suspicions. Unlike the consortium, we don't go off half-cocked. We need to be sure about what truly is going on before we take action.
Listen, Durga might be a lot of things, but I know he's not in with the Anunnaki.
How so?
Because...
That's no answer! Hey, Mo, let me loosen his tongue up a little bit.
She produced a 9-inch knife with a serrated edge, which she was almost never without.
Let me tell you how I got this knife.
Don't bother. The deciding factor for going after the Naga stockpiles of 20th century technology was that the consortium had been told to by one of the Anunnaki. We'd get the equipment to further our aims of controlling North America, and they would get the means to rejuvenate Tiamat.
When are you idiots going to learn that you can't make deals with the overlords?
Don't lump me in with them. I was told to go and act on rumors.
Which of the overlords did you deal with?
I'm just an errand boy. And besides, they all look alike.
You knew enough about us.
Well, yeah, because I'd actually run the risk of encountering you. You don't skulk behind the scenes, and being explorers yourselves.
Fine. So an overlord wanted the Naga out of the way? They sent an awfully small force.
The old god's information about us was based on outdated intelligence. When the barons sent their soldiers against us, they inflicted heavy losses among the Truebloods. Garuda was only one of many, though his struggle was the most heroic.
In the 30 years since, thousands have been added to the ranks of our race. It is part of Durga's plan to reinforce the population against another genocidal attack.
Durga's plan? But he told us about his distrust for the newly converted.
Without the newly converted, there would be less than 500 Naga in the world, rather than the 10,000 who now exist. The calling went out for pilgrims to come and be raised to an elevated status.
Rejuvenating Tiamat. So instead of going to her for these treasures, there must be something beneath the city.
Ancient pictograms? I don't know the Naga's written language.
It's based on Hindi.
The scroll work is an archaic form. And besides, all of the sections are repeated.
You mentioned that during the tour. Is there anywhere else where there might be a control panel, perhaps near the Cobra Baths?
A control panel? There are primary controls for the Cobra Baths, but they are not like the pictograms. We simply pour the solution into a vat, the pilgrim enters and is transformed. Then the vat is drained back into the main storage.
Bridget frowned. A Naga warrior entered the room, then bowed.
Forgive my interruption, but Prince Durga requests the presence of the humans and Princess Hana. There has been another incident.
On the way to the hangar, Kane was quick to notice a scrawled creed on one wall.
It is in Hindi. Enlil the Redeemer. So much for the mystery of who is causing the disturbance among the Naga.
But how much of this is Enlil, and how much of it could be our other option?
Cobra men, wielding assault rifles, were poised and ready to charge into the flight bay. Wisps of smoke twisted through the archway, and the familiar stench of explosions and torn bodies reached Kane's nostrils. Durga paced back and forth, kept out of the line of sight of the hangar by anxious bodyguards. If looks could kill, Durga would have laid out his Naga defenders with a glance. With the arrival of the envoys from Cerberus, Durga's mood improved somewhat. At least the Cobra Prince would be able to talk with someone.
What happened?
We've got two pieces of information. One is that their goal is to get the skimmer operational. The second is that the group's title is the Feast of Enlil.
Three bits of information. We know their current location.
If knowledge is supposed to be power, then why do I feel so impotent? Apparently, they started a fire using helicopter fuel. In the confusion, a group of the insurgents managed to rush the skimmer and take it over.
Kane looked at Grant and Bridget. Already, the archivist's mind seemed to be grinding out the minutiae of the hangar's layout, her perfect memory of the flight bay rolling across her mind's eye. Grant knelt and pulled a dry erase marker from his pocket, marking off a map on the tile floor.
Is that to scale? I seem to remember more aircraft on the west side.
I'm just doing a rough for now.
Would you prefer that I do the mapping and leave you free to delineate approach vectors? Durga, it'd have been easier if you had a command post set up.
The Enlil followers only struck a few minutes ago. It's not as if I have tents, maps, and tables in my back pocket.
That's all right. Besides, this is just preliminary work. We don't have the specifications on the part of the hangar where you put the skimmer.
That's why I'm using the erasable marker. And that, Bridget, is why the layout doesn't look to scale for you.
All right. Sorry.
Grant rose to his full height, looking down at the map.
So, how many little fists are hanging out at the skimmer?
My men didn't have a chance to count. There were at least two weapons firing on the guards, as well as burning fuel. With the fire and the smoke, an accurate assessment was impossible.
It's probably not more than three Naga. They moved quickly and made use of a good distraction. Are there any soldiers in there?
We have them on the radio. They're trying to get a closer look, but apparently the skimmer's weapons are active. Why the Nephilim didn't use them when we found the craft?
Perhaps the reason you found it was because Enlil wanted to supply his followers. You bring in an operational skimmer with cosmetic damage and a dead crew.
It doesn't make any sense that way. I had Naga soldiers protecting the ship. No one was even supposed to be behind the tarpaulin.
Did you have guards stationed inside the ship?
No. I had called for a complete quarantine of the area. Do you mind?
Grant handed the Cobra Prince the marker. Durga knelt down and drew an addition onto Grant's diagram.
See? That part of the hangar was away from the weapons magazine, just in case the skimmer might have some form of transmission that compromised the safety of our explosives.
The tarp also would obscure someone approaching from another portion of the hangar, wouldn't it?
There is no entrance on the other side.
Air vents? Repair access tunnels?
I don't buy the air vent theory. Have you ever tried crawling through one?
Have you?
As a child, I played in them. My bodyguards always found me because the walls of those vents are fairly inflexible, and any weight on them would create loud banging sounds. We might have serpentine features, Miss Baptiste, but we're still limited by our bipedal nature and our physical mass.
So, a repair tunnel or another form of secret passage akin to the Queen's throne room?
That's another thing that's confusing me. Mother's escape route was a very closely guarded secret. Only those entrusted with her protection knew of that corridor.
So Enlil has contacts within the Queen's guard, or former guard?
It's possible. Not to accuse those currently protecting her. We lost a half dozen good warriors in that attack, with another three wounded badly enough that they could no longer fight.
What about washouts? Back when we were magistrates, we had one or two who made it onto the force but didn't last long. We only recently encountered one who turned to banditry.
I have my duties, but I will run this past the head of the Matronal Guard. He is more familiar with the Naga under his command than I could be.
Fair enough.
Any idea if they damaged any of your aircraft?
Why would that be a factor?
To prevent pursuit. Especially if they want to take the skimmer out.
They have the ship's guns working. Maybe they know how to fly it. I wanted to get the skimmer flying again.
To see if Tiamat had anything worth salvaging?
Is it wrong to want your father back?
No, it isn't. I'd have tried it, if the possibility had existed.
Ah, my sympathies. That's the thing. I wanted to use the Cobra Bats to their fullest power. Somewhere on Tiamat is the means to interface with the liquid and program it for other purposes.
I have a theory that the Cobra Bats already have a form of programming interface, and it utilizes cues based upon the pictogram alphabet that carry your city's history.
What do you mean?
There has to be some form of control panel utilizing the pictogram language displayed in the carvings in your city. If it can be found and figured out, the control panel can be used to give the nanomachines new orders.
So all this time? For the past 30 years I've had the ability to resurrect my father? I just didn't know where the controls were?
If the pictograms were copied from an original template accurately, the carvings would serve as a form of Rosetta Stone.
What? Oh, the tablet discovered in Greece. It said the same thing in Greek and two other languages. Linguists were then able to extrapolate the other two languages from what was known of Greek.
Yes.
It's hard to imagine the caves you've lived your whole life in possessing any hidden secrets. That doesn't matter. Right now we've got the people who tried to kidnap my mother threatening our lives.
Cain and Bridget locked eyes for a moment. The prospect of power already in his control had taken Durga's mind off the worries of armed killers in close proximity to nuclear weapons.
You're right. If they take a shot at the storage magazine, there's a chance they could crack the containment on your warheads. The last thing we need is radiation, or worse, particles of plutonium getting airborne.
Why would that be more dangerous than the radiation? And shouldn't we be worried about the warheads detonating if they use an energy weapon on them?
The explosives used to create a nuclear reaction are relatively inert. They detonate through electrical impulse, not heat or impact. The real danger is in the form of the fractured plutonium core. The airborne particles, if inhaled, will deliver a far more lethal dose of radiation than a conventional leak.
And how did you know we had nuclear weapons?
When we came through the hangar, the radiation warning symbols gave it away. Durga was giving us a bit of a backhanded threat, but an understandable one.
Showing off our nuclear weapons!
It wasn't as if I opened the doors and let the humans fondle them, Hannah. Cain, you've had experience with the weaponry of the skimmers. Could they cut through 3 inches of armor plate and radiation shielding?
But it'd take a long, concentrated blast. When the Overlords came after us, we had defenders able to take cover behind rocks, and the energy blast duration was very short in general.
They have the time, if necessary. How about the vulnerability of the skimmers?
They can be taken out with a Stinger missile. They really don't have anything that a Death Bird doesn't have, except for speed and trans-atmospheric capability.
Durga waved one of his Naga commanders forward.
Have warriors stationed outside the cave entrance with anti-aircraft missiles. If they try to make a run for it, we'll blow it out of the sky.
Yes, sir.
Durga returned to the improvised layout that Grant had drawn.
Someone get me the plans of the hangar, too. I want to know how they slipped in.
Give me the marker.
Durga handed it back to Bridget, then watched as she began sketching a smaller, more finely detailed version of Grant's map.
What are those, vents?
No. Like you said, if we tried making an entrance through the vents, we'd make enough noise to turn it into a death trap. These hatches in the walls are access points to the pipe system honeycombing the underground city, if your facility is anything like our headquarters.
Right. The utility tunnel system. Electrical, fuel, water. I remember now. I played hide-and-seek in there as a boy.
How much room is in there?
For you, Grant, not enough.
How about Cain?
It'd be a squeeze, but he could make it.
Is there any way to enter the hangar's utility tunnels from inside here?
Kane looked over toward Domi, who seemed to be fidgeting.
What?
You'll need some backup, since Grant can't scurry through without you.
I know you want to come, but remember what you volunteered for.
Right. Keeping Mo safe and making sure Fargo doesn't get out of line. But going by yourself!
If Kane can do it, I can.
Fair enough. We'll need our gear bags, though.
I can have soldiers pick them up. It'll cut down on the time. Tell me your plan.
Durga kept his thoughts shielded as he watched Kane and Bridget slip into the utility hatch. He personally handed the flame-haired archivist the stubby little copperhead submachine gun through the hole.
Be careful, you two.
She nodded in response and disappeared down the utility tunnel. Durga stepped back. The Naga technician sealed the hatch, then left the prince to stand watch. A smile curved his scaled lips. Enlil might have had the ability to monitor his thoughts, but Durga doubted that the telepathic communication resulted in a deep mind probe. It was a risky ploy, pitting the Millennial Consortium, the Anunnaki, and the Cerberus explorers against one another. If it hadn't been for Durga, then the Millennial Consortium wouldn't have known a thing about the Naga's supplies of technology. Durga had convinced the Millennialists that they were working in the interests of a lone overlord. Since the fall of Tiamat, the surviving Anunnaki had abandoned the idea of alliance with each other. As such, the Millennial Consortium was interested in keeping any contact with the remaining overlords secret from their brethren. That level of paranoia allowed Durga to manipulate them. The consortium was looking out for its own interests, and it would take advantage of any offer of allegiance. The chess game was also being played by the Anunnaki against the consortium, and the Millennialists had found themselves at odds with one another, as in the conflict that had left Fargo high and dry. Durga could tell that even Kane and his allies were hedging their bets. They had kept Fargo close by, even going so far as bringing him back to India. The Cerberus warriors wanted every advantage they could get in case Fargo was manipulating them. Durga cursed himself for letting his interest in the nanomachine interface dominate his thoughts in a crisis situation. He hoped that he had recovered, but he doubted it. The games of intrigue and the laying of conversational minefields were too complex. He hoped that his minions and the Fist of Enlil could do some damage to the former magistrate and his female ally, but after watching the fluidity that Kane had displayed while storming the royal chambers, Durga was certain that he would prevail even against Naga warriors wielding Anunnaki technology. Even without the extra grenades and weapons drawn from their gear bags, Kane was a formidable combatant with swift reflexes and a steady gun hand. That kind of skill gave Durga pause. The Naga prince was a fighting man, trained in marksmanship and unarmed combat since he was a child. But he wondered if it would be enough to best Kane if the time came. There were other advantages. Durga's natural reflexes and his venomous fangs might provide him the edge needed. Even so, the prospect of sending the Cerberus warriors up to Tiamat in the improvised orbiter, then detonating a nuclear warhead to kill them, was an attractive plan. Durga was not an old man, but the years were starting to catch up with him. The best part of Durga's machinations was that he had managed to draw in Enlil. The overlords were not forgotten in their efforts to eliminate the Naga. Pulling Enlil into this conflict was more than just icing on the cake. It was a chance to eliminate the mightiest and most resourceful of the overlords. If Enlil grew desperate enough, he might revitalize his links to the assemblage of Colonel Thrush and the pan-dimensional craft. Enlil had to be stopped now, which entailed the use of the Cerberus rebels. Kane and his allies would be all too willing to strike such a blow against the leader of the Anunnaki. Though they would be wary of Durga, the opportunity that he presented would be too juicy a morsel to pass up. The Millennial Consortium had also assembled another expeditionary force in the months since Fargo had been repelled. This group was composed of hundreds of soldiers, bandits, and coldhearts who'd been recruited with the promise of murder and pillage. The consortium welcomed the prospect of gaining an arsenal of nukes. Even in an atomic war-ravaged Earth, the power to shatter an army with a single shot was too good to pass up. The environment was already heavily damaged, so the consortium could be far more casual in its use of the hugely destructive munitions, either defensively against rival armies or in the form of global blackmail. The thought of such a controlling organization gave Durga a bitter taste in his mouth. The humans were much too willing to destroy the world all over again for just a sliver of power. Pitting Cerberus against the consortium, backed by the might of the Naga, would give Durga just the opportunity he needed. Not only would the conflict weed out officers more loyal to his mother, but the Millennialists would also be crippled in their international reach. The rumors of recruitment that reached Durga's ears let him know that their resources in Asia had been taxed to the limit. With a cadre of some of their finest officers thrown into the mix to ensure success, the consortium was in an all-or-nothing end run against the Naga. Durga finally arrived back at the barricade that his warriors had built to contain the insurgents in the hangar. Grant had assembled a massive rifle and was getting ready to provide support to Kane and Bridget when the time came.
There was another exchange of gunfire between your boys and Enlil's toadies.
Did we lose anyone else?
The Naga prince knew that severe losses to his nation's population would make his rule that much more difficult. His ploy required the elimination of leaders, not those who would be considered cannon fodder.
No. A couple of the men were wounded by shrapnel, but they'll be fine.
Good. I have to confer with some advisors.
Grant's face flickered with a moment of suspicion.
When Kane and Bridget get into position, you'll tell me?
Right.
In the claustrophobic confines of the utility corridor, Bridget followed Kane. They navigated their path by Bridget's instant memorization of the twisting route, thanks to the plans provided by Durga's people and multi-optic visors that granted them night vision via infrared illumination.
Durga took the bait, Baptiste, which explains why we're being given the go-ahead to derail his attempt to hijack the skimmer.
What makes you think that?
Because he's given us help to come in behind his own cultists.
According to Fargo, one of the Anunnaki was interested in unseating the leadership of the Naga. Add in the fact that Durga would be implicating Enlil in this insurgency.
No, that doesn't fly. Using Enlil as a scapegoat does nothing in terms of lessening any alliance they have. Enlil loves the fact that he's one of the most feared beings on this planet. And despite a few minor differences, all of the Anunnaki look alike.
So Durga passes off his sudden beneficiary as some other overlord?
Enki himself. Once the Naga have been harrowed enough in conflict with those willing to follow Enlil, they'll cast about for a more comforting friend. And given that Enlil is hardly sociable...
Not to mention that Enki wouldn't have to be present to give Durga all the information he requires to upgrade the Cobra Bat's interface.
No, good point.
Kane paused and looked at a hatch.
Okay, we're here.
Bridget examined the utility hatch. It was designed as a safety mechanism against a burst pipe unleashing gas. Not only was it airtight and soundproof, but it was also securely placed so that opening it would take an effort. The clamps around the ring, fortunately, were undone. The hatch was slightly ajar, and Kane pulled Bridget back.
What?
Kane shook his head and focused the illuminator on his multi-optics, scanning for tripwires. His point-man instinct was correct once again as he spied a gossamer-thin thread stretched across the hatchway. Kane took out his combat knife and followed his half of the tripwire. Bridget opened a pocket multi-tool and examined her side. The walls of the tunnel were not smooth, and there was a raised lip around the hatchway. In the shadow of that lip was a packed worm of plastic explosives, and the tripwire had been hooked into two pencil-thin detonators. Any pressure on the line would trigger an electrical charge through their bodies so that even if one of the detonators had been pulled loose, the arch of high explosives would unleash a guillotine blade of force that would carve anyone trying to get through the hatchway. Kane indicated that he found one detonator. Bridget pointed out hers. Kane used his combat knife carefully, cutting into the putty-like explosives, releasing the section that the detonator was anchored in. The tripwire grew slack, and Kane carefully sliced the tender thread connecting the two, now that it was no longer taut. As soon as he did that, Bridget carved the detonator on her side of the plastic explosives, then peeled the pliant material off its trigger. Kane smirked in the darkness, pulling down the wadded explosives, packing them into a soccer ball-sized lump. He then attached a longer section of slender cord to the pencil detonator. Bridget arched one eyebrow as she watched him insert the rearmed pencil detonator into the dough-like mound. Once that was done, Kane embedded his grenades into the mass of explosives.
You are one dangerous bastard.
You could flirt with me later.
He anchored the end of his cord to a pipe, though he knew that the slamming hatch would do the job in pulling the pin on his improvised explosive device. He handed the blob of demolition to Bridget.
I'll take care of the hatch. You stuff this through.
Will the panel protect us?
It should. The explosives aren't shaped into place, and there's plenty of room for the overpressure to escape. Any shrapnel or debris launched by the detonation won't get through this steel.
Bridget held the ball.
Give the word.
Kane rested his hand on the hatch's handle. With his other hand, he counted down on his fingers. Reaching one, Kane threw the door open, and Bridget hurled the improvised bomb out. There were two Naga right in front of the door, who looked down in surprise as a gray-white ball of putty with grenades rolled out between them. As one looked toward the hatch, Kane yanked back hard on the door. Kane pushed on the hatch, but it was stuck in place. Kane braced his back against the pipes, Bridget pushing in next to him in the same position. They didn't need to talk to coordinate their actions this time. Their 4 feet hammered the hatch out of its frame with a well-timed kick. Smoke swirled. The cloud was thick, but nothing moved within the smoke. Kane went through, muzzle first, searching for targets. He looked to his right and saw that one of the Nagas who had noticed their momentary intrusion was a pulverized slab of lifeless flesh stuck to the wall. The other was nowhere to be seen in the restricted visibility of the skimmer's hangar. Bridget slid out of the utility tunnel on Kane's heels, and they switched the modes on their multi-optics, searching for a setting that would allow them to peer farther than an arm's length in the post-explosion confusion. Kane whirled, pushing Bridget out of the way. One of the dazed Cobra men stumbled forward, jaws distended and fangs flashing with feral fury. Kane reversed his fighting knife and drove it like an ice pick through the Cobra man's lower jaw. Blood gushed through the double wound, and the Snake Man twisted the knife out of Kane's grasp. Thanks to the jarring effects of being caught by Kane's improvised bomb, the Naga's assault had none of the blinding speed that Manticore had demonstrated only minutes before. Bridget's copperhead focused on the chest of a second Naga insurgent.
Put the optics on setting 7, Kane!
Kane shoved Bridget out of the way of a hissing stream of stinging venom.
Maybe later.
Kane swung his Sin Eater toward the Cobra Man who had launched the spray of blinding poison. The skimmer started to rise. Kane dived onto the ramp and scurried into the skimmer. Bridget was hot on his heels, her slender form slipping through the shrinking opening that would have snagged the broad shoulders of the Cerberus warrior.
You're gonna catch a missile if you stay on this side.
So are you, so let's stop the bus.
The skimmer rose higher, and the Cerberus pair burst into the cockpit, where a solitary Naga sat at the controls of the ship. Kane leveled the Sin Eater at him.
Land this thing, now!
The Naga looked back over his shoulder, eyeing the high-tech machine pistol only inches from his face.
Shoot me, and we crash!
We're not high enough for it to matter.
The pilot's fang swiveled down as his lip curled. Before the Cobra Man could lunge and spear those venom-filled barbs into Kane's arm, the ex-magistrate pulled the trigger. Kane whirled and scooped Bridget tight against his side as the skimmer lurched in mid-flight. The ovoid ship no longer had a steadying hand at its controls, and it flipped sideways, shattering the rotor blades of the helicopter in the hangar and sliding through a series of obstacles before hitting a solid wall.